So this week is Parshas Pinchas. You know, of all the years, all the weeks in the year, this one is the hardest for me to say anything useful or new or holy or Torah because of the story. You know, the story, Balak has hired Bilam to curse the Jewish people. He's failed. Before Bilam leaves and goes back to his land, he advises Balak to send in the girls into the Jewish camp, and the girls will seduce the Jewish men, and they will be able to get them to worship the idol, Baal Peor. And so it was. And many of the men were worshiping the idols, and God says to Moshe, gather the elders and take all those men who are yoked to Baal Peor and kill him. Before Moshe can carry out the command, comes Zimri. Zimri is the Nosi, he's the prince of the tribe of Shimon. And he takes the Midianite woman in front of Moshe, and he has sex with her in public. So, Heima Boichim Pesach Oel, Moshe and Eliezer and everybody, all the elders, are crying in front of the temple, in front of the tabernacle. Comes Pinchas and takes, he takes a spear in his hand, and he stabs the couple, and he walks around with them, and everybody sees that this couple is caught in flagrante delicto, right? And they die. Vehiba Mesim B'Magefa, 24,000 died in the plague. So this week's Seder opens, God speaks to Moshe, and he says to him, Pinchas ben Elozer ben Aaron, HaKoyen, Pinchas, the son of Elozer, the son of Aaron, the Kohen, the priest, Heshiv is Chamosi me'al b'nei Yisrael, he turned back my rage from the Yidden, Bekanoyes kinosi b'soicham, when he was jealous, my jealousy in them, and I didn't destroy the Jewish people, Bikanosi, in my anger, my jealousy. So therefore, tell him, Hinani Noisin Lois Brisi Sholem, I give him my covenant of peace. Briskunas Oilam, and Pinchas then becomes a Kohen. So this is a hard seder for me, because you know, Pinchas is acting in a way, Moshe is there, all these elders are there, why Pinchas jumps in? And you know, immediately when he killed Zimri, who was a prince, so all the other princes of the tribe stepped in, and they said, what's going on here? This Pinchas, who's a nobody, he's going to kill prince of the tribe. Nosi wasn't just somebody who became, it was voted, you know, the prince of the tribe. This is somebody who was appointed by God and by Moshe, you know. So this wasn't just a nobody. So the act of Pinchas, this the gevura, the punishing, the ability to be implacable the way he was, and to go against the grain of everybody standing there, you know, wailing and confused, and what should we do? And Pinchas just having the certainty of what is to be done. In fact, the Gemara says he comes to Moshe, didn't you say, Moshe, didn't you paskin, haboye laramis kanoim poigim boy, that if you see a Jewish man having sex with a non-Jewish woman, that you could do anything you want to him. even though if he stops and he finishes, you can do nothing to him because it's not a punishable offense. But at the time, so Moshe says to him, "Kiraina da'agrisa, the person who reads the letter, he parvanke, let him be the postman. If that's what, if you're the one who remembers this law, you know, so you be the one to deliver." So Pinchas takes the roimach, he takes the spear, and the Gemara says how many miracles happened to him at that time, you know, that to show that this was the right thing to do. So God says to Moshe, Pinchas, the son of Elozah, the son of Aaron, a Kohen, Heshivis Chamosim al b'nei Yisrael, he turned back my anger from the Jewish people, V'loi Chilisis b'nei Yisrael, and I didn't destroy the Jewish people. So there's the implication that the Jewish people deserve to be destroyed. So what for? I mean, so if Zimri sinned and other people sinned, but why the whole Jewish people? There's, you know, the way God speaks to Moshe and tells him to thank Pinchas, like the implication is clear that everybody's involved. And I didn't destroy the Jewish people, says God, because of what Pinchas has done. So there's so much more to this story than what is appearing on the surface. The thing is, how does one read the story? So the Ishbitzer and his children, they talk about it in ways that no other Mefarshim, none of the other commentators do. Could you please press star 6? The Ishbitzer says, so let's do away with this idea that Zimri somehow was an adulterer, because you know if he was just a hedonist and he was just out for his own pleasure and stuff like that, the Torah wouldn't make a whole parasha out of him. So the Ishbitzer says that there are 10 levels of lust. You know, there's a person who, you know, dresses himself up and he puts on, you know, makeup and he goes out to a club because that's what he wants to do. He wants to pull the Yetzirah, wants to pull the desire onto himself. And then you can move away from that all the way to somebody who doesn't look at women, doesn't look in the mirror, he doesn't put on fancy clothes to look good, you know, he doesn't perfume himself, he takes all kinds of precautions not to think about those things that will bring the Yetzirah on himself. So if somebody like that ends up in a compromised situation, then obviously, you know, this is God's will. So this is a Torah from the Meir Shiloach. So he says that Zimri was very, very holy. He was from the tribe of Shimon. Shimon and Levi were the two brothers who went in and rescued Dinah from Shechem when Yaakov and his other children just didn't know what to do. And they said, "Hakazoinu yasel achiseinu, is our sister going to be treated like a prostitute?" And they went and they rescued her by force and they killed all the men. And they were so holy, right? And here you've got Zimri. Like the Medrash says, you know, he takes the family name and it's Ashen Porach, you know, shame and disgrace. And the Gemara says one of the names that he's called Ben Solu, because Solu is like Lasalsel, means to comb. You know, he's the one who combed out the name Shimon. It's like, you know, when you comb somebody's hair, it means like, you know, you expose every thread. And, you know, by the time Zimri had finished doing what he was doing, it's like everybody has, he's combed out the whole tribe there, you know. It's a public disgrace and a tragedy. So what is it? What's going on? So the Noizdesha, the Biskivitzer, who was the son of the Meir Shiloach, he says that God had said to Moshe, gather the elders and Vohoikasa Amen. You know, you've got to make like a public demonstration of Machoi. You've got to stop what's going on. You know, these Jewish boys are being seduced to worship Baal Peor, which is the most disgusting kind of idolatry and paganism, and you've got to put a stop to it. And before he could carry out the command, like, you know, when Moshe comes down, when Moshe comes down the mountain and we're worshiping the Egel, and he says, he calls the Bnei Levi and he says, you know, I want you to, every person should take his sword in his hand and kill anybody that had worshipped the golden calf. He says, Vayasu kedvar Moshe, and they did what Moshe had commanded. Here it doesn't say Vayasu kedvar Moshe, because the Zimri, you see, even if everybody wanted to do what God had said, which was to put a stop to the idolatry and the worship of Baal Peor and everything that was going on, the behavior, it couldn't happen, because here comes Zimri. And Zimri is the Nosi, the tribe of Shimon, which are the holiest of the holy. And he's doing this public act. You see, nowhere in the Torah do we find such a story where God has commanded something and then somebody else comes and interferes and prevents it from happening, except by the mouth of the Meraglim, by the story of the spies, where God has said, Ale Resh, go up and inherit the land, right? And so we're under a command to go and inherit the land. And along come the spies, and they say, oh, we can't do it, they're too strong for us. So we vattle, we nullified the command of God, you know, so everybody died. The whole Jewish people had to die, because God had given a command, and even if the next day we already wanted to go, it's like, I commanded you to do something. The command was given. Any excuses that you make are not just, they're not valid. So here, God had given a command, along comes Zimri, and prevents the command being carried out, and it was never carried out. It says, Vayemesim b'magefa, and later there was the 24,000 who died. They died in a plague. It wasn't the way that God had commanded this to happen. So there was something about all of us. There was something about all the Eden that was involved. So the Ishbitzer says that what happens, the Zohar Kodesh says that after we die, there's something that he calls Kusta de Chiyusa, the ghost of life, Havle de Garme, the hollow of the bone, that there's something left of us. You know, the Gemara says, "Madaloi have a chaya, madav a chay lekolshkin." If something that has never been can live, then something that has already lived for sure it can live, right? Each of us that is alive was once not alive, was once not. We've come into being from nothing. Right? Every one of us is a new consciousness in the universe. So that consciousness, once it exists, the Gemara says, if something that wasn't can come into existence, and something that already is, for sure it can be reconstituted. And so the Gemara is talking about Tchias HaMeisim, the resurrection of the dead, right? That you know, if something which never was alive can be, then surely something that is alive and now is not alive but still exists somewhere, Kusta de Chiyus, it's the ghost of life. Even after death, there's the ghost of life that continues to. So that for sure can be reconstituted in life. And so the mechanics of Tchias HaMeisim, the resurrection of the dead, is things aggregate around the Kusta de Chiyus, the ghost of life. When I sleep, the Ishbitzer says, when I sleep, where's my consciousness? I'm unconscious. The Gemara says sleep is a 60th of death, right? Where is my consciousness? The consciousness is inside, right? But am I conscious that I'm conscious? I'm awake now, so I'm conscious that I'm conscious. So when I'm asleep, what happens to that consciousness of consciousness? It's a kusta de chiyus, it's a ghost of consciousness. It's a little bit like death. So the thing is, if I wake someone from their sleep, what's the process of awakening? So the Ishbit says, the kusta de chiyusa, the consciousness, the ghost of life, is always there. It's always conscious. It exists inside the sleeping person, inside a person who's in a coma. There's still consciousness. It's the ghost of consciousness, though, because you know, sometimes I can even tap that person, try and wake them, and I can't bring them into consciousness of consciousness. Nevertheless, if it wasn't there at some level, it couldn't be regained. The thing, the consciousness would collapse. There has to be a process whereby there's something inside that is conscious of conscious, that can awaken every other part of the person, of the mind, to be in a state of wakefulness and awareness. So the Bisyakya says that what was happening to us as a Jewish people was like what happens to a human being when they fall asleep. That there was something in the water of Shittim, in that place that we were. There was like the Gemara says, there are different kinds of water, different places. The water has different characteristics. And the water of that particular place had that characteristic. Who knows? You know, maybe had some kind of a psychedelic, psychotropic drug in it. Ich weiß was. But it had that property of being able to make us, in a sense, unconscious. There was only one person in the whole Jewish people who was conscious of being conscious, and that was Pinchas. Everybody else was unconscious already. Pinchas was like that part of us that was still able to wake up the rest of us. And Zimri was that part of us that was leading us into sleep. And so, whatever the rights and wrongs of what Zimri was doing, but in an effect, that if we had been a sleeping person, what he would be doing would be leading us into coma, into a deeper and deeper sleep. Not even Moshe could wake us up at that point. The only person who was aware that he was aware, and this is what Moshe says to Pinchas, if you're really so aware that you are aware of your awareness, that you're conscious of your consciousness, no, so you're the one to wake us all up. Bisyakov also says that the killing of Zimri is like the circumcision of the Jewish people. A person who has foreskin, he's an orel. His whole body is an orel. His mind is an orel. He's an uncircumcised. It's a legal definition. What is it's a piece of skin? What's the grace is? Why is it so crucial? Why is it so on or off? It's a binary thing. There is the oral. Nevertheless, the Torah says that's how it is. That's the meaning of circumcision. And so long as Zimri is here among us, so we are becoming uncircumcised people, or we are still an uncircumcised people. So by killing Zimri, this is an act of circumcision of the Jewish people that reveals something. And what it does, the Bisyakya says, it reveals something in every person that we have inside us, something that is awake. So what Pinchas does inside every Yid is he wakes us up. He wakes up inside us the kusta de chiyusa, that ghost of consciousness. And that once Pinchas has done to Zimri what he's done, no Jew can ever fall asleep like that again. He is the wakefulness inside every Jew. So inside, so regardless of who I am, regardless of who you are, each one, every Yid, we have inside us Pinchas, the Kohen. And never again is it possible for something to happen to us as Jewish people where we would then make the decision that Zimri made, which is to turn our back and say, I don't care. I don't care. Inside us, something is awake. It gets tapped on the shoulder, it wakes up and says, whoa, what am I doing? Whoa, I need to stop this. Whoa, I need to be available to God. If God says no, it's no. There's not, Sinish Fahalan, there isn't in the whole universe a Jew now who is asleep the way we were asleep at that moment when Zimri was taking this Midianite woman, at which point something inside us had switched off, because that was what Zimri was doing. He was saying, I don't care. Hey, God said no, I don't care. Listen, God is right here in front of you saying, don't, I don't care. The thing is like this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Zayin, and this is how it's paskened in the Rambam. If you have the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin, you know, they're trying to judge somebody, are they chayv misa or not? Should we put this man to death or not? Is he guilty of this capital offense or not? Right? If everybody, see, this is the difference between an American jury system and the Sanhedrin. If everybody in the Sanhedrin agrees to put the person to death that they're guilty, they walk. Can't be that you can't find something, some mitigating circumstance. Can't be. If you can't find some mitigating circumstance, you can't put this person to death. As a judge, you have to wait. You know, the Gemara says, "Have masunim badin." Right? It's one of the things that the Anshe Knesset Hagdola instituted. That you know, when it comes to cases, any kind of case, the judge waits overnight. To wait overnight, let's sleep on it. You know, maybe we'll find something good to say. Maybe something will come to me. Maybe I'll find some mitigating circumstance, some way of defending this person. If we're sitting there and we've heard a case and we've all banished this person in our mind, we said guilty, we're not leaving any chance of lodun lina sadin, to let the thing go overnight, to percolate a little bit. We've already decided. It's interesting that the Bais Yaakov says the reason the person walks is because that must mean if you can't find one good thing, if you can't find any way of defending this person, nothing, you can't find a mitigating circumstance, it must mean it was from God. If it was a person's act, you would find in it something human. Whatever the reason, Moshe Rabbeinu, looking at Zimri, could find something good to say about him. I mean, like the Medrash says, he stood in front of Moshe and he says, "Bas Yisroi mihitilach." You know, Shimon and Levi were the two brothers who went to rescue Dina, and they're the ones who said, "Are we going to let our sister be treated literally like a prostitute?" So Yaakov, before he dies, he says, "Besoidam al tovoi nafshi." He says, "Shimon v'Levi achim." Shimon and Levi are brothers. Klei chomas mechirei seim. Their tools are weapons of war. "Besoidam lo tovoi nafshi, I don't want my soul to be included in their secrets. I don't want to be included, let my honor not be included in their gatherings. And Rashi says there, Besoidom, their secrets, Masa Zimri. Bekolam, in their gatherings, Masa Koirach. So Koirach, it says, Koirach ben Yisrael ben Kos ben Levi. Doesn't say ben Yaakov. And here, Zimri ben Suri, Nesibesov Lashimoini. Doesn't mention Yaakov, right? So the first mystery in the Torah, the first soid in the Torah is what's going on here, is the story of Zimri. So Shimon and Levi, these are the two brothers who get involved with his sister Dina and Shechem and stuff. So if they have to be so careful about Midianite women, Zimri says to Moshe, so you're a Levite. What are you doing? Who said you could marry this Midianite woman, Tzipora? Oh, you know that she's your bazook, she's your soulmate. No, I know that this woman is my soulmate. The thing is, the Ishbitzer says that Zimri is from tribe of Shimon. Shimon married Dina, because when Dina was with Shechem and they tried to rescue her, she said, I'm not leaving unless one of you, either of you, can marry me. And Levi says, you know what, I don't think so. I don't think so. This is a bit risky. And Shimon said, I'll marry you. If that's how we can get you away from Shechem, I'll marry you. So, because Levi didn't get involved in this suffix, in this doing an act that's going to require clarification to become transparent, by Moshe's time, there he's already ready to marry a Midianite woman. Zimri is not ready. Zimri is still carrying Shechem inside him. It's only when Zimri connects with Cosby that Shechem is finally gone. And Shechem, the soul of Shechem, finally goes through Zimri into this Midianite woman, and then it's gone. So in another way, the killing of Zimri is a way of removing Shechem from the Jewish people. And again, another kind of meat, another kind of circumcision. The removal of that Canaanite, that pagan desire, which has come in through Dina into the Jewish people. In fact, the Zohar Kodesh says that the 24,000, none of them were Jewish, and that they were all men who had Erev Rav, the vast multitude of people who had come out with us from Egypt, and they had all married into the tribe of Shimon. Again, how come the Erev Rav, how come this vast multitude, you know, they don't marry into the other tribes, right? Only into the tribe of Shimon. Because the tribe of Shimon is still open to gathering the sparks of holiness, of desire, that are out there in the nations, and the way that they can come into the Jewish people is through the tribe of Shimon. And that's why in the land of Israel, the tribe of Shimon doesn't receive its own territory. Its territory is scattered. There was no, on a map, you know, you've got the different lines showing the different territories. Shimon didn't have one. His inheritance came inside the territory that was called Judea, that was belonged to the tribe of Yehuda. Because Shimon needs protection, because he's like a sponge that absorbs, that is capable of sifting these elements that come through from the nations that no other tribe is available and no other tribe is capable of. And the Ishbitzer says that Shimon Bar Yochai, about whom we sing Nasa Odam Nema Bavarecha, that when God says, you know, let's make man, he's thinking of Shimon Bar Yochai, yeah? That he's from the tribe of Shimon. And that, you know, each of the tribes has had its moment of leadership of the Jewish people. And that, you know, for the last 800 years, you know, the Zohar Kodesh has been the book, the most important book since the Bible. And it's Meshevet Shimon, right? So, if Pinchas cannot find one good thing to say about Zimri, right? Moshe Rabbeinu could find something. Moshe Rabbeinu could, you know, like the, we started, we opened up with the Me'ar Shiloach says there are, you know, if you look on a curve, 180 degrees, you've got on the one side the guy who dresses up and puts on perfume and goes to the club, you know, to pick somebody up because he wants to have sex. On the other side, you have somebody who sits in the Beis Medrash and, you know, never looked in a mirror in his life and wouldn't instigate, you know, talking with someone of the opposite sex, you know. And so somebody on that level who, like Zimri, you know, who's holy, 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 and he finds himself in that situation, must be that he has no free will. Right? So this is a famous Me'ar Shiloach that I once heard from Shlomo Freifeld, that he was saying that people who were learning the Me'ar Shiloach said, you know, let's print the Me'ar Shiloach without the Pasha of Pinchas in it. Wait, let's just take out this story because this is too radical. Because, you know, the Rebbe is saying that it's possible not to have free will around sex. The Ishbitz also says, "V'zeh mamish inyan Pinchas shehoyedan es Zimri lenoyev ba'alma." That Pinchas, not only does he not say that, you know, Zimri wasn't at the 10th level; he was at the 9th level. He doesn't. He says, "Zimri was at the first level." Zimri was like that person who you know, gets dressed up and puts on makeup and perfume and goes out to the place where he's, you know, that's how Zimri is according to Pinchas. No. So the Bais Yaakov said, if that's the case, then Pinchas is like a Sanhedrin. If a Sanhedrin doesn't find one mitigating circumstance to say about a person, then they walk. So how come, Bishlam and Moshe Rabbeinu, who could find something mitigating to say about Pinchas, no, he doesn't want to kill him because he's got something mitigating. But he would be allowed to. Why? Because he's like a Sanhedrin that can find a mitigating circumstance. But Pinchas, who cannot find one good thing to say about Zimri, then his killing Zimri is now no longer legal because he's like a Beis Din that can't find one person among all those Dayonim who can defend this person. So the Medrash Tanchuma says that Zimri has three names. Here he's called Zimri ben Solu. Zimri, and the Gemara in Yevamah, so where the Gemara says Zimri, like Muzar, right? It's like he's like an egg. If you imagine taking an egg and turning it into a scrambled egg, right? So you put it through a fruit processor, right? Until you've taken the albumen and the yellow and the white of the egg, and it's all you know, you've put it through a blender, right? And now see if you can impregnate this egg. So by the time Zimri is finished with doing what he's doing with Cosby, you know, his sperm is like being put through a blender. Go try and do something good with it. So that's why he's called Zimri ben Solu, as we said, because he gives his hair to be combed out. The whole tribe is like exposed. Another name that you find in Pashma is Shaul ben Haknanis. Shaul shehishel atzmei ledvarever. The word sheila means to lend. He lent himself to this very sinful act. Ben Haknanis, the daughter of the Knanis, because he allowed himself to do this Knanite act. Public sex is a Knanite act. Umashmoy, but what is his real name? His real name is Shlomiel ben Tzuri Shadoi. Shlomiel, my wholeness, my perfection is God. Ben Tzuri Shalai, my rock is God. It's interesting that Cosby, she's Bas Tzur. Her father's name is also Tzur. And here you've got Shlomiel ben Tzuri Shalai. So there's something happening here. So the Bais Yaakov says, you know, one of the names of death is Abaddon. It means loss. And that part of Zimri, which is called Zimri, which is like a Beitza Muzeris, like this egg that has been put in a blender, that it's lost. It's lost. So, and we know that that part, as we were saying before, that part is that bit of him which is really Shechem ben Hamar. There's another name for death, which is Yaakov Avinu refers to it as Sheol. Sheol means to lend something. Moirid Sheol Vayol. You can go down into Sheol and come back up again because it's lending. It's not giving away, it's not a loss, it's a lending. So that part of Zimri which lends himself to the Avera, that part can be redeemed. And then, of course, there is the part of Zimri that never does a sin at all, which is called Shlemiya ben Tsuri Shadoi. And that's, the Gemara says, Umashmoy, and what is his real name? His real name is Shlemiya ben Tsuri Shadoi because there's part of him that didn't sin. And as there is a part of everybody, that no matter what we do, even when we were worshipping the Egel, we said a few times, there's part of us, the Jewish people, that wasn't sinning, that really we were just expressing the way that we wanted to worship God. So, elsewhere in Ishbitz, he talks about death as being an entry into a place of suffix, that dying means to go into doubt. That's the real meaning. Like when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he was crying and they said to him, why are you crying? He was ill and he was looking at death. And he says, V'loy oid, and what's more, Shnei drochim, I see two roads in front of me. I don't know which one I'm going to go by. So death is entry into safek, into doubt. Pinchas has no doubts. And therefore, Pinchas doesn't enter into death. And that's why he becomes Pinchas Eliyahu. And Eliyahu is the biblical figure who doesn't die. He goes up living into heaven. But because Pinchas has no doubts, and here we find in his encounter with Zimri, he has no doubt about Zimri's guilt. None. So the Zohar Kodesh says in Parashat Vayigash, talking about Eliyahu, Elijah the prophet, God says to him, what are you doing? He says, Kanoi Kinosi, I've been, Kanoi Kinosi, I've been jealous on your behalf. And God says to him, you know what? Leis alma yochel misbelach. The world can't put up with you. The world can't stand you. The world, we can't really have in the world people who don't have doubts. And so, Ola Hasora Hashemaimo. So Elijah the prophet, even though he lives forever, but not in the world, he can't live in the world. But he doesn't die, he goes up in this chariot, this whirlwind into heaven alive, because he doesn't have any doubts. Elijah never has any doubts. Pinchas doesn't have any doubts. And it's true. That if you don't have any doubts, then there's no concept of death that can touch you if you don't have any doubts. It's just too powerful. On the other hand, leis al miyochel lemisbloch, the world can't stand you. The world can't support you if you don't have any doubts. And here, you know, because Pinchas can walk up to Zimri and just stick the spear in him, he doesn't have any doubts. So, on the one hand, we can't live without Pinchas, we have to have somebody who has no doubt. On the other hand, the world can't live with Pinchas because he has got no doubts. And the halacha is that if you've got no doubt about somebody's guilt, then they have to walk, because you have to have a doubt. You have to be able to. Pinchas can't. So there is part of us. The beauty is that we're all Pinchas. Everybody has inside them Pinchas. Pinchas is the true Kohen, and the true Kohen doesn't die, and therefore has no tumor, no death, doesn't come in touch with death. And there's part of us which is Pinchas, and that never sleeps, and that you can tap the Yid on the shoulder, and the moment that he's looks to be the furthest away from God, and you tap the Jew on the shoulder, and at that moment you say to him, "Are you available to God?" "Yeah, I'm available." Now bless you and me, that we should become aware inside of us of that part of us, the kustu de chiyus, the ghost of life, which is always aware and always conscious.